He's known as Mop Mop. His name is Andrea Benigni, and he's been in the Nubian music business for quite some time. Club music, fusing that with jazz and pop, and of course it caught on, and for at least, I think it's probably about 15 years, almost 20, that he's been at it and carved out this little niche for himself. This is called Locomotive, and it's from the album Kiss of Kali that was put out in 2008. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and what a week! This was one heck of a week, and you get the feeling that there's so much more to come. I don't know if we can survive it. It's been a traumatic week on many levels. But today is Free Your Mind Friday, and the floor is yours. You decide where the conversation ought to go, but please make it worthwhile. Use your time well, and have an opinion about something, a real opinion. You want to use the time wisely. And this is the whole point of Free Your Mind Friday. We live in a society where you don't get to be heard very often. And in the newspapers, you don't get to be read very often. So this is our way of saying, let's hear what you're thinking. What's on your mind? Introduce a new idea. Come up with an analysis that we probably have not considered at all until now. So, and keep your presentations tight. We have only an hour. So if you take 14 minutes or 40 minutes to get to your point, well, you just locked out a whole bunch of people. And it's my job not to let you do that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. We start off with Randolph from Montreal. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Yes. I'd just like to talk about two different things. Firstly, I'm saddened by people that now that Tulsi Gabbard is getting traction, people are losing courage. I think that it's a rough road to get to the presidency, and there is a lot involved. So I think hopefully people will not lose courage. She is doing well, and she is expressing herself in many venues because she went to court to protect freedom of speech, and which was being cut by radio station. And the second thing that struck me, interestingly, is there were Gary Noel had this program on the Farage debating about the weather and the changes that radically are taking place. It suddenly struck me that what is happening is that humanity for the last hundreds of thousands or a thousand years, it is the problem of war. Wars, in other words, utilize products and things to fight wars that under normal circumstances, they might never have gone through so much, say, lumber, steel, coal, all these products which are polluting the atmosphere, polluting the water, and poisoning our very existence. So I think that these things, this continual wars by humanity, is just destroying the planet. And this, look, the forest. The forests are needed to purify the air. But wood cutting is being ravaged. The woods are being ravaged. So we have to, it's not only the environment the changes are more complex, and if they stop these insane wars, the nations would be far better off.
All right, you got us started today. Thanks for putting something on the table for us to consider. Thank you, Randolph. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you, Eutrice?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, can't complain. You know, the normal, everyday status quo of America. Impeachment, it seems, is the key word in the country. For what reason? I don't know why, because when it's all said and done, 45 will be reelected, the country will go on, and they will find something else to address the problems that are facing us that they really don't address. I mean, the tragedy in all of this is that it is basically nothing more than a dog and pony show. And the sad thing is that the dogs and ponies are the American people who just can't seem to understand truth for what it is when it smacks them right dead in the face. I mean, if this man tells you something, you believe it. When something that you're seeing is telling you something different, then that's a problem. I mean, he's basically admitted that the status quo that he put forward to the Ukrainian people was what it was. I mean, he said, listen, basically, I want y'all to investigate Joe Biden and his son, give me some information, and I'll give you the $43 or $48 billion so that you could buy the weaponry that the United States Congress had already granted you. Now, if that's not to be impeached by, then I don't know what my lying eyes are telling me and what my lying ears are hearing. It's just that plain and simple. Now, to go through this whole charade, which it's going to be, nothing more than a charade, because when it's all said and done, the Senate is not going to convict them. Then, you know, because he's the great deceiver, he'll then be able to use it to spin it just like he spent the Mueller report. Now, what frustrates me is, why can't the American people wake up and see and smell the coffee? I just don't understand it. It's extremely frustrating. Why is one group of people in the country can see it for what it is, but another group in the country can't see it for what it is? And why can't those who we put in office to be the so-called leaders of the country be honest about it and be truthful? I mean, you think the Republicans don't know that this man is an absolute disaster in any and everything that he does in regards to the direction of the country? But you rather do all of this so that you could have control of the courts? Is that it? So that you could change the direction of the country moving forward and keep us in the ice age, and you think it's going to go well? Because this is all this is about. It's him being able to stay in office so that he could continue to do the things that are going to destroy the country for generations to come. The courts. I mean, how do you justify putting judges on the bench that don't even have the knowledge to be on the bench? How do you justify these things?
But he doesn't have the knowledge to be president. So what is the conflict here?
But see,
thanks
that's
a lot.
The thing.
Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Marcus from Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Ms. Leed. Always scintillating to hear you. I'd just like briefly put something in perspective for people. I had the great pleasure years ago to hear a lecture by the great evolutionary biologist Ernst Mayr. He was considered the most important evolutionary biologist since Darwin. And he was an extremely engaging person to listen to. He explained, he said, the problem with human beings is we are unable to distinguish between what intelligence is and stupidity is. He said, now, the game is, on planet Earth, to win the game is you take the perspective of evolutionary biology. He said, the game is this. Since the beginning of life on planet Earth, 99.99999% of all organisms, all forms of life that have ever arisen have found a way to kill themselves off. And it's only a small handful of creatures that have figured out how to adapt, which is the way you win the game. He said certain kinds of bacteria have figured it out, beetles, cockroaches, they'll live through a nuclear winter. They have figured it out. He said, now the average lifespan of a species is about 100,000 years before they find a way to destroy themselves. They kill off their most valuable members, or they destroy their own food supply, or they destroy the environment. And that's it. He said, now, for over a million years, humans in different forms did pretty well as hunter-gatherers, lived in small tribal bands. Most of their life was spent in leisure, we know now. And he said, but in 10,000 years of what we call civilization, we have brought ourselves to the brink of environmental destruction. We could end life on Earth probably by accident with nuclear weapons. We kill each other in ever greater numbers. He said, from that standpoint, we do not look like a successful species, do we? Now, that's the game. He pointed out, he said, you either figure out how to live with one another, or you go the way of the vast, vast majority of all other creatures. Now, in my lifetime of looking at this problem, the one unique quality that human beings have over other creatures is not consciousness. Almost, it turns out, almost every living thing is conscious. But what we can do is think about our thinking. And the element that makes us important is that we can devise the concept of freedom, of liberty, to think and do the way we wish. Now, Nina Simone said it best. She said, ain't nobody perfect because there ain't nobody free. I can't be free if you're not. So that's the equation. If you want to understand where to put your energy in life, you can't be free if your neighbor's not. You have to figure out what's the source of the people that endanger and encroach on your freedom the most. That's the project, because that's what's going to kill us off. We all go along with the project that destroys our human freedom that allows us to thrive. Now, as far as I can tell, in my humble opinion, that source, that threat, is concentrated wealth. And so okay. I don't bother with politics too much. I believe that we should be organizing around the project of direct class warfare. Concentration of wealth is the problem. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. John from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, John, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm calling in reference to my pet peeve, and I'm sure a lot of other people's pet peeves, and that is the student loan crisis that we're facing right now. And what bothers me the most about it is it seems awfully like a setup to destroy the middle class of this country. They lie by lying, by telling everybody that all you need to do is get a college education, a degree, a master's degree, you know, and you'll be set for life. I believe that the universities are involved in this. They have brought them. They brought the middle, including myself. They have brought the middle class of this country to their knees, to the point where they may start dusting off their shotguns in the basement, because these people that are running our country and, for all intents and purposes, the world, are nothing but a bunch of hoods and criminals. And we are letting them get away with doing this to us over and over again. They did it with the loans to buy homes in 2008. They set us up right now for this, this kid students believe this stuff. And they took out these loans, and it's devastating not only them, but their own families who are doing the most that they can to try and bail them out of this circumstances. And we have two candidates that are talking about loan forgiveness, okay? Loan forgiveness. And every time as much as I like these two Democratic candidates, Bernie, of course, and Warren, I can't help but think every time I hear this loan forgiveness, I can't help but think of hope and change. Hope and change, which we heard from Mr. Obama, and from the first day he addressed the nation with the State of the Union address. I called my friend and I said, two words. How would you describe this speech in two words? And he said, sold out. And that's exactly the two words I was thinking of and exactly what I believe he did. And you know, even if they do get elected, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, they're not going to be allowed to make the kind of changes that need to be made in this country in order to save our butts, because they just won't allow it. Because the people who run this planet are nothing but a bunch of lying, greedy, murdering criminals. That's what it is. We're dealing with criminals who are setting us up on the carpet, and they're going to pull that out from under us. The next thing you know, we're all going to be homeless or in debtor's prison. That's the way I see this whole society going, and it's just so sad. It's just so sad. I really don't have anything else to say about it other than that. And, you know, I hope that somebody somewhere will figure this whole thing out and get us on the straight and narrow. Other than that, I don't know what else to say. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you. And it is a very important subject that the whole nation should be concerned about, because there's a lot of people suffering because of indebtedness. And, of course, we're talking about student loans. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention again. 888-874-4888. Ma'at, you're on the air from New York.
To the beloved family, I tell you, I'm almost speechless from all this somber, sober, and profound.
Hello, I'm not hearing you too well.
Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, but you're going in and out.
Okay, let me just make sure the cord sometimes pulls out.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I was just saying that I'm almost speechless in terms of the profound and somber and sober points of the previous, I believe, three callers, you know. But I want to share something in terms of some information in watching the news. I heard Brittany Cooper. She's right at Rutgers. I believe she's an African-American studies and or history professor there. She recently wrote a book called Eloquent Rage as a Strong Black Feminist. And she was making the point when she was on Ari Melba about what seems to be a point that we cannot miss. And she referred to Trump and his white nationalist project. And if you enfold the Republicans and the fact that they can't grasp the truth or facts or logic or reason anymore, that's basically where it comes down to. And I say that in the point of hearing John Meacham, who I think his book is called something like he's a presidential historian, and something about the better angels of our nature, our souls, or what have you. But he was making the point about going back, say, 100 years to, you know, he was talking about how things passed, I guess was his point. But he was referencing 1919 and how the Ku Klux Klan had made a resurgence, in that there were 2 to 6 million Americans signed up. The 24 Democratic National Convention had over 300 Klan delegates, and they had 100 or so ballots because they wouldn't go for Al Smith because he was an Irish Catholic. And I guess the point he was making was that the country goes to certain, he mentioned it took 4 years to get over McCarthy. So what we're looking at in terms of the larger mean, it really is a white nationalist project, okay? So I think what we have to do is we have to, first of all, start to come together, because I don't even see, you know, you Treece, you have such a wonderful forum and create such a dialogue, but it seems with the social media, you know, people are doing their own things to an extent where we're not coming together. So let me just take a pause here now.
All right. Well, thank you for putting that
thank
on
you.
The table. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And greetings to you and to your audience.
Thank you. To you, too.
Thank you. I wanted to, free my mind a little bit and try to add a little bit of truth to the soup regarding the late Congressman John Conyers. I was on another radio program, and I got the honor of speaking with former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who's now Dr. Cynthia McKinney. And I was asking her thoughts about the passing of Congressman John Conyers. And her response was that, and I quote, when John Conyers was good, when Congressman John Conyers was good, he was good. End of quote. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the...
What do you think she meant by that, by the way?
Well, she meant that when he was on his game, he was on his game. I'm putting my spin on what I think she meant. She meant that when he was good, he was good. And now I've heard other people say that at some point he stopped being good. It, you know, it depends on who you ask in the role of congressman. That's my spin on it. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up was... the history of the Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday Bill. While it's true that John Conyers was the first congressman to introduce the bill 4 days after Martin Luther King had been assassinated, it was Representative Katie B. Hall, a Democrat from Indiana, Congresswoman Katie B. Hall, it was her bill that she introduced that became the King Holiday Bill. It passed on October 1983. She introduced it August 1983, and it passed the House 338 votes to 90. Now, mind you, John Conyers was the first congressman to introduce the bill, and he continually introduced the bill. And the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, also members of it would introduce the bill. I think even Shirley Chisholm introduced the bill at one time. Other members introduced the bill. And in 1979, November, Congressman John Conyers' bill for the King Holiday was defeated on the floor by just 5 votes. And then in 81, it was introduced some more, and Stevie Wonder got on board, and, you know, he came out with that Happy Birthday to You song, that anthem. It became the anthem of the movement. But in November 1983, Ronald Reagan signed into law. It was called Public Law 98-399, declaring the third Monday in January as a federal holiday honoring Martin Luther King Jr. and his service to the country. And it wasn't until January 1986, where the first national celebration of the King holiday took place. Some states came on board later. Now, mind you, John Conyers himself talks about Katie Hall and her role and how it was pivotal in getting that bill over the line. Katie Hall, black woman from Mississippi via Indiana, or in Indiana via Mississippi. Now, to hear John Conyers talk about them, this himself, there's a video on C-SPAN archive dated January 14, 2008, the history of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. And toward the end of that clip, toward the end of that video, somebody asked John Conyers, well, how is it that you were carrying this bill all this time, but then at the last moment, kind of like Katie Hall is the one that, you know, delivered it home kind of thing. And he spoke about that, the history behind that. So I just wanted to add a little clarity, a little more truth to the mix that, yes, he was pivotal in getting that bill introduced first, but it was Congresswoman Katie B. Hall, Democrat from Indiana, whose bill got passed. There's a famous photograph of the bill being signed in, I forget what part of the White House, Reagan signing the bill, congresspeople on his left and right, Coretta Scott King is there at the signing, and Congresswoman Katie B. Hall is on that picture. I haven't seen a picture where John Conyers is in the picture. Maybe that was just the cropping of the photo. I don't know. But again, just wanted to shout out to the late Congresswoman Katie B. Hall.
All righty. Thank you. We'll pause at this point, take a short break, come right back to your calls at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is when we gather in a kind of group, what could I call, group therapy. We are getting rid of things that have been dogging us for a long time. We're offering opinions and analyses. We are talking about the issues of the day, talking about the issues, in fact, in another day. But it is your time. You know, you decide where you want to go, and that's the purpose of Free Your Mind Friday. You are the person who is going to dictate where we go. 888-874-4888. Okay. So nobody touched on the this rancorous week we've had, huh? What's going on? Everybody says, I don't want to touch that stuff. I want to go someplace else where I am far more at ease and I'm not in a state when you get both angry and excited all at the same time. I find so many people these days, there's such anger. I'm chuckling, but there's nothing funny about it. People are really, really having a rough time with where the country has gone, what it has come to, and where it appears it's going. It's very concerning, and I don't know how it is that the political establishment as a whole, they just don't understand the depth of feeling people have about this. They are treating it as, well, you know, just another political development, but it is so much more than that. People are very, very concerned about the direction of the country and how do you situate yourself psychologically, financially, emotionally? How do you situate yourself to deal with something that you don't even know? You could only conjecture what you think is going to happen, but in any event, it's not good news. We are in a period where people are just on the brink. They're feeling apprehensive. They're very upset. They're very saddened. That's another character trait that you don't see very often in the national body, where people are just saddened about the reality that they are living and are expected to deal with. Our country is in bad shape, and this is a time we need people who can talk some sense, give us a sense of what we ought to be thinking and doing right about now. Alicia from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Thank you for taking my call. Can you
hear
me okay?
Thank you for calling in. I'm okay.
Okay. Thank you. I was thinking about the question you asked earlier in the week about how people are feeling, and I was just reflecting myself on how I am feeling. And I have to be honest with you, I do feel the angst that you were speaking about. I do. I feel it. And I guess as far as what to do, I really just have to, first and foremost, just try to stay in the present moment and just try to do what's in front of me to do. I know it sounds pretty simple. You know, it may not necessarily solve any problems, but, you know, that's what I try to do, just in terms of, you know, just trying to take care of myself in that moment, because with all the stuff that's going on, you know, in our country and, you know, with global climate, it feels very overwhelming.
Have you been able to put your finger on what exactly it is that is triggering this reaction in you?
Like you spoke about, just the uncertainty, not knowing the mm-hmm. yeah, the uncertainty, you know, not knowing if you're going to be okay. You know, like, for instance, you know, Gary's been talking a lot about climate change and, you know, how it's like right at our door. And, you know, it's like, you know, you make plans for the future, but then it's like, should I even make plans for the future? You know, is there going to be a future?
Yeah. Besides you, how many people would you say in your sphere of influence feel this way?
I would definitely say, to be honest with you, fewer than most, because, like, I've noticed, like, for instance, with members of my family, you know, they're like, hey, I'm comfortable, you know, I have my pension, I'm financially secure, I'm okay. So, yeah, a lot, you know, a few people feel that way. People who, I have to say, kind of listen to news, get their news from other sources outside of the mainstream media, they also feel the angst. But for, like, my family members who listen to MSNBC or other mainstream media sources, in their mind, everything is good. They're good.
Things can change rapidly, and not for good. I mean, the arrow is pointing downward, and we're seeing some indications. We're seeing a downturn in the economy. It's slowing down. I just read an article yesterday that in New York City now, people don't even want to buy co-ops. And they're wow. encouraging their friends and condos, co-ops and condos. They said, don't buy. This is the wrong time to buy. And so the real estate industry in New York is feeling the pinch. People are trying to figure out new ways to live, where you have subdivisions are going on like crazy, and people are occupying half a room. these, you know, it's getting really crazy. So I understand, you know, how you're feeling. I'm feeling just like that. The trends that we have been seeing don't suggest that things are going to get better anytime soon. So we have to figure out very carefully how we could really get through this tough period.
Exactly. I just wanted to mention also, you've oftentimes, you know, you talk a lot about Harlem, you know, Harlem has been taken over. During the week, yep. Someone had mentioned Nikki Barnes, and I decided to watch the documentary on Nikki Barnes, and, you know, and it was talking about Harlem in the 70s and how, you know, there was this basic, there was a white flight, and it was a terrible place, you know, it was a terrible place. It was a slum, basically. And I'm thinking, like, wow, Harlem back in the 70s and Harlem today. It's night and day. It truly is.
Well, you know, I've noticed this trend now of lifting up people like Nikki Barnes, who was a notorious drug dealer, gangster. And of course, like any other human being, there were, I'm sure, some good sides to him. But when you look at the toll, just Nikki Barnes alone and Frank Lucas and people like that, and the gangs who went into the drug business and literally decimated Harlem, decimated
it. Yes.
And so yeah. I don't find any reason that, you know, they should be lauded like this. They talk about Nikki Barnes and Frank Lucas and other gangsters as if, you know, they're like movie stars. But we seldom talk about the devastation in Harlem in particular, the absolute devastation brought about by the infestation of drugs, and not to mention the violence. It was a time when Harlem crossed over into heavy violence.
Well, I have people in my family who were victims of, you know, the heroin plague, you know, of the 1970s in New York. So I hear what you're saying.
Thanks, Alicia, for calling. Thank you so much for contributing today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, you, Therese.
Hello.
I just tuned in, but, you know, I heard your point about what's going on. And what comes to mind to me, and I'm going to be somewhat redundant, people don't seem to understand. It's very simple. The game that we're in. It's very simple. Number one, the people who live here don't run the country. They don't own the country. The ruling class owns and runs the country. It's simple. And they must be doing something that is really working in their interests as the number of billionaires increases regularly. So the goal, as some people think, is to create a place that is good for the people that live here. People need to understand that that is not the goal of the country, certainly not the people who run it. Don't care anything about that. Their goal is to enrich themselves. So people have to get it. There's no way that someone who owns and runs the country is concerned with the welfare of the masses of people. So that is why they're just enjoying themselves with their billions and billions and their policy of imperialism, enjoying themselves, making money, and people have to get it. So I think the techniques that they use to trick the people, mainly propaganda, constant propaganda, the usual divide and conquer, and control of all the instruments of not educating people, which means empowerment, but training them to go along with a system that in no possible way, since its very beginning, since the start of, before the Constitution started, it was designed to benefit the few at the expense of the many. So as long as people don't get it and get the attention diverted to all these things about impeachment and all the rest of the things that they get you involved in to look at, they'll never understand how they are being played by the ruling class, that fraction of 1% who controls the country, controls the politics in the uniparty, the two divisions, Republican and Democrat, and their goal is to enrich themselves at the expense, and they don't care anything about the pain and devastation they're causing among the people to reach their goal of enriching themselves more. They never have enough. They never have enough, and the people don't get it, and their attention, just like the bull in the ring, you get the bull's attention to be on the cape rather than the saw that the matador is going to use. So that's what's going on now, and that's the way that David sees it. I can't see it any other way. It's unfortunate that the ruling class is so good at what they do, and their job is to play the people as they pick the pockets of everybody who lives here and throughout the world.
All right. In the not too distant future, I'm going to ask for your help. We will need to upgrade technologically just a little so that on my end, we don't get these frequent boo-boos happening. We can just continue. But I'm happy to hear your voices. I'm happy to hear what you're thinking. And we are, unless, I mean, I need to tell you, but we are building a community on PRN right here. We're building community. And this is a wonderful thing. And we shouldn't be afraid of it. In the meantime, the benefit is that we are in training. All of us are in training. What's the training? The training is in recognizing everybody's a teacher. Everybody is a teacher. And so we improve the quality of our exchanges, recognizing that we're teachers. So we put a little bit more meat, a little bit more substance on what we're saying to give people points of reference and so forth. That's very, very good. Today we had an excellent example in Leona from Michigan, who gave us context, who gave us a whole different point of view. And that was an excellent presentation in just a short time. So we got better and better at it. We certainly will. I want to let you know how proud I am, very proud, every time we interact with each other, because we are growing. And hopefully, as we grow, we get more and more people joining the conversation and looking at knowledge in a different way. Everybody has some kind of knowledge that they can offer somebody else or offer to a situation that needs to be analyzed, drawing from your own experience. And this is excellent education. So I want to thank you for keeping the standards high, uniformly high, for making the effort to do a little bit of extra research and so forth, but also for having the generosity of spirit to bring yourself to others and to share what you are thinking. That's a very, very special kind of interaction. And I'm glad that it's becoming more and more natural for you to do. Thanks so much. It is the weekend. Surround yourself with people who bring good things into your life, who uplift you, and who enjoy your company and you theirs. We'll see each other on Monday, and thanks again for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Welcome on a bumpy choo-choo train.